This is Dean Gocher. I'm founder and director of the Institution for Authority Research. I encourage you to trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding, in all your ways acknowledge Him, then He's the one who directs your paths. This following presentation is in regards to two books referred to as Bloom's Taxonomies. The first book was published in 1956, Taxonomy of Educational Objectives, The Classification of Educational Goals, Book 1, Cognitive Domain. Main editor was Benjamin Bloom. In 1964, they published the second work, Taxonomy of Educational Objectives, Book 2, Effective Domain. David Crathwell's name is given as the leading editor, but Benjamin Bloom was fully involved. Why these books are important is that they are foundational for teacher certification, not only in the United States of America, but around the world. The first book I want to talk about is the Cognitive Domain book, or the Knowing Domain. And for educators, they're familiar with the stages or the steps of this book. You start with knowledge, then you move to comprehension, and then application, analysis, synthesis, and evaluation. Knowledge is just simply acquiring data. Comprehension is that you're aware of it being applied or can be applied. And application, analysis, synthesis, and we'll look at this all in detail. First of all, on page 6, Bloom states that this taxonomy is a psychological classification system. He states on page 15 that the taxonomy must be organized from simple to complex classes of behavior. Well, since it's psychological, it's actually not just psychological, it's sociological, and we'll see that in this following statements. But the simple are simply traditional-minded people. Complex is dialectic or transformational behavior. So the taxonomy was organized to show a spectrum from the simple to the complex. On page 32, an amazing statement by Benjamin Bloom, he states, as it's been pointed out before, we recognize the point of view that truth and knowledge are only relative and that there are no hard and fast truths which exist for all times and all places. Now, if you are familiar with Karl Marx, he has a famous statement. He says, in the eyes of the dialectic process, nothing is established for all times, nothing is absolute or sacred. So what we find in Bloom is actually a paraphrase of Karl Marx. Again, Bloom stating that truth and knowledge are only relative and that there are no hard and fast truths which exist for all times and all places. On page 174 to 175 in the Cognitive Domain book, The Synthesis Condition, Bloom defines it as clinical psychiatrists have long been interested in a means of studying personality. Then evaluation stage 6. On page 185, he says, educational procedures are intended to develop the more desirable rather than the more customary types of behavior. The second book, The Effective Domain, has 5 steps. Receiving or attending is lowest, then responding, and then valuing, organizing, and characterization by value or value complex. On page 39, Bloom states that the superego is conceived in psychoanalysis as functioning substantially in the same way as the conscience. In other words, there's a similarity between the superego and the conscience, but by making such a statement, he is also aware there is a difference. Then on page 39, he says, superego development is conceived as the incorporation of the moral standards of society. Page 39, he says, therefore, the levels of the taxonomy should describe successive levels of goal setting appropriate to superego development. So the taxonomies are not concerned about the conscience development, but they are concerned about the superego development. Then on page 54, he states, in fact, a large part of what we call good teaching, and he has that in quotes, is the teacher's ability to attain effective objectives through challenging the student's fixed beliefs and getting them to discuss issues. Now, the effective objectives are the feelings or the heart. The Bible says the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked. And we will see as these books are applied to this nation in its educational system that it has a direct bearing upon the behavior of the children coming out of the classrooms. In fact, quite clearly, Bloom knows what he's doing. On page 91, he states the effective domain is, in retrospect, a virtual, and he puts this in quotes, Pandora's box. He says, we are not entirely sure that opening our box is necessarily a good thing. We are certain that it is not likely to be a source of peace and harmony among the members of a school staff. It is in this box that the most influential controls are to be found. The affective domain contains the forces that determine the nature of an individual's life and ultimately the life of an entire people. In other words, whoever controls the affective domain determines the way the next generation will think. In the traditional setting, you control the affective domain by stating facts are important, and if you don't get the facts, then you're going to be disciplined or punished. In other words, truth is the agenda. But in the socialist dialectic mindset, the feelings are what is focused upon, and therefore the facts become relevant or relative only to what social worth they can be applied to. On page 165 and 66, Bloom gives away his agenda or where he gets his agenda. He says, in the more traditional society, a philosophy of life, a mode of conduct is spelled out for its members at an early stage in their lives. In other words, the parents discipline children. He says, a major function of education in such a society is to achieve the internalization of this philosophy. And what is that? That's simply a way of thinking that there is right and wrong, black and white, light and dark. As God states, you know, you obey me, you will be blessed. You disobey me, you will be cursed. And so it's a very didactic, dualistic mindset. And, of course, to the social engineers and the Marxists, they knew that they could not achieve world peace with this way of thinking, this traditional philosophy, because it desired borders and property and protection of the home and recognized privacy as being separate from surveillance and evaluation. But Bloom continues. He says, this is not to suggest that education in an open society does not attempt to develop personal and social values. It's interesting that prior to this, he talks about the traditional society, and yet he says this open society, a different word. He didn't say transformational society. And he didn't start by saying closed society, because a traditional society is a closed society. There are limits and measures. There is right and wrong, and the standards are set. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. It's a closed society. Heaven is a closed society, and so will be hell. It is a closed society. But what they're saying is we have to have an open society, but you notice that he confused the word, so you didn't have a chance to compare and contrast unless you knew what you were looking for. But he says, in regards to this open society, we do also concern ourselves with values. And then at the in the page on 66, he says, but more than in traditional societies, it, or this process, allows the individual a greater amount of freedom in which to achieve a Weltanschauung. In other words, the societies are going to be graded or based upon the feelings and the eros or the id of the citizens, and no longer are there going to be the restraints to those needs, felt needs of society. There are not going to be absolutes that God is, because truth and knowledge is only relative. Now the agenda is relationship, the hallmark of globalism. At the bottom of page 166, Bloom, in a footnote in reference to Weltanschauung, writes, often this is too challenging a goal for the individual to achieve on his own, and the net effect is either maladjustment or the embracing of a philosophy of life developed by others. Now, what he means by that is if somebody doesn't come in and help the individual to overcome the effect the parent or higher authority has had upon him, and to allow him to feel comfortable in functioning in a permissive environment, that person will either just totally go over into his senses, his feelings, and become a self-seeking person and therefore maladjusted, or he will slip back and embrace a philosophy of life developed by others, and what they're referring to is they will follow men like Hitler. The whole process that came here and the intensity of it upon our nation was the effect that Hitler had upon Europe and around the world. And what the social engineers, which were simply transformational Marxists, saw was in America, traditional homes, that even despite Adorno stating that the traditional home in America did not have the indication that it would be fascist or would produce fascism, they still believed that traditional home, because that's what they wanted to destroy. They simply justified destroying the traditional home because of the formula they had developed, that it always led to a fascist system. And so the embracing of philosophy developed by others is just synonymous to following Hitler. And then on the bottom, the CF in the footnote, he refers to Erich Fromm, his book, Escape from Freedom, 1941, and T.W. Adorno's book, The Authoritarian Personality, published in 1950 out of Berkeley. Now, the process, if we look at the cognitive domain, and I'm going to start over looking at these books in detail. First of all, the first book, The Cognitive Domain, was dedicated to Ralph Tyler, Bloom states, Ralph W. Tyler, whose ideas on evaluation have been a constant source of stimulation to his colleagues in examining, and whose energy and patience have never failed us. Now, Ralph Tyler is an important person to understand. He was involved with the RAND Corporation, which was in Ford Foundation, was working through it, all in doing the Delphi method involved in Europe. Ralph Tyler was busy with six presidents, fully active in setting up an educational agenda from the top down, despite the fact that he said we didn't want a top-down system, we wanted the grassroots to have influence in shaping society, the federal government shouldn't be controlling what the citizens or the teachers have to say. And so he was doing a double standard, saying one thing for public consumption, doing something totally different, helping to set up a Politburo system, top-down control, with the perception to the people that they had input, when in reality they did not. Bloom, on page 19, he states, the behaviors in the cognitive domain are largely characterized by a rather high degree of consciousness on the part of the individual exhibiting the behavior. In other words, there is an awareness that what a person is doing. He is not just a stimulus response. He is actually cognizant of his behavior. He states that in the six levels, knowing, comprehending, application, analysis, and synthesis, that there is a particular system, a particular way of thinking. And so they go from a lower order thinking to a higher order thinking. And again, he states on page 6, this is a psychological classification system. Prior to that, on page 4, he says, the idea for this classification system was formed at an informal meeting of college examiners attending the 1948 American Psychological Association convention in Boston. So even back then, these guys were trying to figure out how they could work out a system that would be utilized around the world in education to restructure the mindset of the students, to allow an experiential chasm to develop between the parent and the child, and use that environment, adolescent environment, to restructure the way the next generation thought. The loyalty no longer to the nation and to the traditional family structure, the loyalty now to a global environmental socialist outcome. On page 8, he says, a somewhat more formal presentation was made in a symposium at the American Psychological Association meetings in Chicago in 1951. No matter the fact that it is illegal for somebody to counsel use therapy on your child without the parent's approval, here is a book that's simply out to do that. The Foundation for Teacher Certification, even in our Christian colleges and universities. Page 17, he says, members of the taxonomy group spent considerable time in attempting to find a psychological theory which would provide a sound basis for ordering the categories of the taxonomy. And so they spent quite a bit of time trying to work out the categories, the sort of like peeling the onion, the layers of development of the person into a Marxist mindset. Consistent with relevant and accepted psychological principles and theories, he states, well, the relevant and accepted psychological principles and theories were simply the result of the Frankfurt School who'd come here. The Bloom actually referred to members of the Frankfurt School who were involved with critical theory. Everything must be questioned. There are no absolutes. Everything is relative. They simply were the result of men like George Lukács and Karl Kors, who set up the first Institute of Social Research that eventually left Germany in 1933 when Hitler became chancellor and came to the United States with a system of Marxism that had merged Sigmund Freud. Now, Marx simply said that religion is an opiate of the masses. Religion is simply obedience. they would see it as blind obedience. But see, traditional education, the teacher would simply teach you that 2 plus 2 is 4, and you were simply to memorize it, apply it to memory, and then apply it in your grade. And so then later on, you would, if you didn't understand at the time, it would make sense to you later on that it worked. But they would see that as an obstacle in the way of the child thinking and discovering for himself what is right and wrong. So the transformational Marxists understood that Marx said religion is an opium, and Freud said that the cause of neurosis is religion. And neurosis is simply that you're restraining your internal desires by standards, preset standards given to you by a higher authority that interferes with your eros, your quest for unity with the world. On page 5, Bloom writes, in the cognitive domain, it has been pointed out that we are attempting to classify phenomena which could not be observed or manipulated in the same concrete form as the phenomena of such fields as the physical and biological sciences. Now, they were already being criticized by true scientists who said the laws are actually within the elements. So if you take iron and another element and you put them under heat and pressure, you can produce different products. You would synthesize them. And they're saying, well, now that isn't true with mankind. You can't use this process on man. Well, these guys certainly could, because they said, well, what's within man is eros. The lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And so these very natures that Bloom, by the way, lays out in his taxonomy, all that's in the world. See, Maslow actually identifies the physiological needs, the self-esteem needs, the self-actualization needs. And so, as Paul says, I do that which I don't want to do, and I don't do that which I want to do. In other words, with my mind, I love the law of God. But see, that law of God came into his life because somebody else gave it to him, presented it to him. It didn't come intrinsically within Paul, or it doesn't come intrinsically in any one of us. Somebody has to teach us the law. But what do we have? He says, but there is a law of the flesh. And so these guys are saying, well, there is a law in mankind, but it is the law of the flesh. And so they're saying, we're going to create an environment where this law, which is natural to mankind, can be liberated from the unnatural laws of the cosmos. And so, i.e., therefore, Pandora's box is opened. It was the view of the group, he states, that educational objectives stated in the behavior form have their counterparts in the behavior of individuals, observable and describable, therefore classifiable. And so the objective was to put people under pressure and see how they would respond. The traditional person would become reactionary in their mind. They would hold to a standard. The tension would rise because they would become either passive, they would not participate, or they would become aggressive and attack the opposition. And so, with a spectrum from the conservative all the way over to the liberal, who could sit in the environment, was very uncomfortable about the limitations, but he would know the procedure to manipulate the environment and to progressively, like the camel with his nose in tent, progressively move the conversation over into a form where everybody could participate and then overcome the restraints by the traditional didactic person with his preset laws. Then on page 10, Bloom states, in the cognitive domain, the major purpose in constructing a taxonomy of educational objectives is to facilitate communication. Now, what he's saying here, you would say, well, that's okay, we learn how to communicate, but he has a deeper intent. Because in a traditional home, when you're told as a child by your parent that you cannot go out, we try to go into communication with our parents because we don't understand. Sometimes we didn't understand. Sometimes we did. But there are times when we're told from God in His Word, we are told to do things that sometimes it just doesn't make any sense. Eve was simply at the tree trying to figure out, now God said I couldn't have this fruit of the tree, and yet it doesn't make any sense. And so she's justifying. She is communicating with herself. She is actually playing the role of God. She's an evaluator. God created the world and He evaluated. Now, she is actually usurping that authority. And she saw the tree, so she's doing science. It's observable and repeatable. But in this case, she is now determining the moral standards of society. Its first materialist activity was Eve at the tree. She was looking at the material world, and through her perception was determining what was right and wrong, what was truth and what was a lie. And therefore, this whole thing was communication. We have to undo the structure of the home, the traditional home. Marx said, once the earthly family, the traditional home, is discovered to be the secret of the heavenly family. Now, what does that mean? It simply means parents discipline their children. They give them the truth, they give them the facts, and of course dad and mom aren't perfect, but the office is. The office is an office that God has given to the home so that the next generation, when they hear God who chastens his children, they will understand. They will already be realizing there's right and wrong, and they're seeking for what is right, and God comes and presents himself through a preacher, through the text, and the person can readily understand. They have a live conscience. The conscience is negative. It goes, cannot, must not, thou shalt not, just like the Word of God and just like the traditional home. And so the whole agenda was to facilitate communication, because when you are told you can't do what your inclinations, lust of flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of life, want to do, then we try to get the person who gave us the law into dialogue, because therein lies the compromise. See, it's not a compromise if the person who's giving the law changes the law, or modifies the law, or ignores the law. And why would he do that? Because they would see that your relationship with them was important. They would want your respect. You know, God is not a respecter of persons, which means he's not going to change the law for anybody. In fact, we are to honor our parents. And respecting the parents is one thing, but honoring is you simply the standards they have given you. See, if you teach a child what is right, and they go out and they praxis or practice what is right, they honor you. But this was all about the why. See, you can't go out why. Now, the why question that wants to go to communication is not learning more of the facts of the parent why you can't go out. It's to get the parent into dialogue, to move them into a how do you feel and what do you think language, to move them away from their position language of is and not. See, traditional education was 2 plus 2 is 4, cannot be any other number. See, this is my property and not your property, and you cannot come on it. This is my child and not your child, and you can't talk to him. So is and not are foundational to a patriarch structure. And so in the home, the parent is actually showing the child how God thinks. The parent is teaching the child, you can't go out. The child tries to get God or the parent or the boss or higher authority into dialogue. But it's not an issue of dialogue, it's an issue of obedience, because the truth has already been given. And so here's the truth, you can't do this. They try to get you into dialogue. Why? In other words, communication. And communication here is to compromise. And the parent stops it by simply saying, because I said so. And if you look at that structure, it's I caused to be. I created this law. I am the creator and you're the created. When God put the tree of knowledge of good and evil in the garden, he was telling Adam and Eve, this is my garden, not your garden. The higher authority brings into the lower. The higher authority brings into those who are under him. The parent to the child, the boss to the worker, God to the creation, the law. He is the law giver. He gives the law, but the law in itself has no power. It's the law giver that has the power. The law giver reinforces the law. So the whole agenda is if we can get the parents and the children, the boss and the worker, God and the creation into discourse, the parent, the boss, God would end up abdicating their office. They would go into equality of opportunity. And so the whole thing was to get them into discourse, to dialogue. And so the whole agenda of the taxonomy was to facilitate communication. Now, how that happens is you liberate the child from the parent's restraints, and the child comes home, has learned how to communicate in a way to cause chaos in the home. The parents are under such stress that they call for assistance outside of the home that's dialectic in its nature, and then the facilitator comes in not to teach the child to obey the parents, because that's not the agenda, because that's didactic thinking, but to help the parents to communicate with their child and destroy the didactic patriarch structure of the home. Marx stated, once the earthly family, the traditional home, is discovered to be the secret of the heavenly family, God, the former, the traditional home, must be destroyed. And how do you do it? In theory and practice. Theory is dialogue. Theory is communication. You've got to practice communication. And so when he states this, what you might see up front is just simply, well, we have to learn how to communicate. No, he's saying we have to change the way we think. The major purpose in constructing a taxonomy of educational objectives is to facilitate communication, to undo the effect of the traditional home, which Freud would say the moment the parents tell the children they cannot have sexual relationship with one another, the traditional home is destroyed. And he saw neurosis as the effect, because the children would desire to relate, and yet the parent comes in to the child who's going to take a crayon and write on the wall. The parent says, cannot, must not, thou shalt not, and has produced neurosis in the child because the child cannot fulfill their inclinations. And therefore, the objective of Freud was to get you on a couch and get you to share your ought-to-be's. Now, see, when you're told you can't do something, and you try to get whoever told you, because it doesn't make any sense to you, whatever you're told, or you just don't want to do it, or you had something else in mind, you try to get the one in authority into discourse. And if they refuse to do that, when they say, because I said so, the next thing you do is you go, ought to be. Well, I ought to be able to. And you're talking to yourself. You cannot dialogue to your conscience. And so what you do, you can't change the conscience, so what you do is you dialogue with yourself, and by dialoguing with yourself, you justify why you don't have to listen to your conscience, why you don't have to listen to God, why you don't have to listen to your parents. That's all Eve was doing. She was dialoguing with herself. And once she could justify that, then God was second. God, there was no fear of God. It no longer was an issue of right and wrong, black and white, light and dark. See, it was now an issue of justification. You cannot justify your position is justified in Christ. God is the justifier in a didactic, patriarchic structure. But in the dialectic structure, you are the justifier. And the justification is to relate with something that you've been told you could not relate with. And so this is the effort of the communication, not only to encourage the communication of rebellion and then eventually revolution, but also to facilitate communication. And this would be the manual that every teacher was able to communicate with every other teacher on the face of the earth on how to re-educate, which is simply another way of how to convert a traditional didactic God-fearing mind into a dialectic, godless, relativist mind. And so it had a lot more going on than just communication as we would interpret it. On page 26, Bloom says, by educational objectives, we mean explicit formulations of the ways in which students are expected to be changed by the educative process. Now, in traditional education, the child would change because they have learned facts. They could go out and stand alone. They knew how to deal with the issues of life as far as what is right and what is wrong. But that's not the agenda. According to Bloom, truth and knowledge is only relative. So now the way of changing is through relationship. And so he's saying this educative process, change in the process, the procedure, is change in their thinking. Now, this is what he's writing. Change in their thinking, their feelings, and their actions. Now, so the thinking is cognitive, the feelings is affective, and the actions are the psychomotor. And this is pure materialism, because you're simply focusing on those three things: physiological, self-esteem, and self-actualization. And so your purpose in life, as Maslow stated, salvation is a byproduct of self-actualization. And what is that? That you can satisfy your inclinations and everybody else at the same time. So therefore, you're going to ride the surf of humanity. And we're going to collectively go down this path together. Then on page 12, he states, what we are classifying is the intended behavior of the student, what the student wanted to do. Well, the child wanted to go outdoors, so we're going to classify how the child responded. Did they simply obey the parent? Well, if they did, they're maladjusted. They're a lower-order thinker. They're unadaptable to change. And if they're put in a situation, they may be either passive or an aggressor, and they may be a blocker to the group working together because they bring in the parents' standards, they bring in God's law, and they're a dominator because they keep insisting that 2 plus 2 is 4, and you know, they're a special interest pleader because they insist that that is their property and those are their children, and they're a self-seeker in that it is their business. And so you're simply reclassified as an unfit, unhealthy person, according to Bloom's taxonomy, when you come in with a didactic, patriarchal, traditional parent structure in your life. And so he says, what we are classifying is the intended behavior of the student, the ways in which the individuals are to act, think, or feel. There's the totality of mankind in their eyes. He has not created the image of God. He said, God breathed the breath of life into the nostrils of man. And what is that image of God? It's accountability. The child is no longer, see, accountable to God. The child is now accountable to the village. The French Revolution with brotherhood. And anybody who didn't think brotherhood went to the guillotines. Anybody who thought accountability or authority went to the guillotines. Same thing was true of the Russian Revolution. They killed the fathers and the father figure. And what are we doing today? Well, we're killing the children, which means the father is irrelevant. He's the one who doesn't have any input. Or if he does, he's very selfish because he wants to get rid of the child, because it's an inconvenience. And the same thing is true for all of our society. They call it patricide. We've got to kill the fathers. And so the father figure in the child is to be eradicated in the classroom. You have to identify the child, though, the way they think, and you have to map the room. And that's what Bloom is doing in his work, the whole spectrum, the taxonomy, like classifying rocks and plants and animals. On page 12, he says, we are not attempting to classify the particular subject matter or content. Now, it's interesting that he says that, because once you bring the dialectic process in, once you map the room and you create an environment that is only man, you're only focusing on that which is common to mankind, then only that information, they call it appropriate information, only the appropriate information that will directly relate to man is accepted. Any information, any matter or content that comes in that is not relevant to the collective experience, that which is common to man, is to be, you might say to the person, well, I appreciate your input, but that's as far as it goes. It is not incorporated. If it cannot fit within the definition of mankind in the creation as a material, because this is a laboratory, this is a scientific process which deals with rocks and plants and animals now applied to man. And so everything that's transcendent, that is not of the creation, because see, all, even the angels are created by God, but God himself, the law of God, the standard that defines the healthy soul, is to be excluded from the outcome. He writes on page 15, only those educational programs which can be specified in terms of intended students' behaviors can be classified. Well, what did the child intend to do? Well, there's, what did Eve intend to do? She intended to eat of the tree, and she, her intentions were, it's good for food. So it was intent for food. It's pleasing to the eyes. It's something that she wanted to be able to enjoy and not fear and not avoid. And it was a tree desired now to make one wise. So something that's desired is something you're looking forward to. So you can't wait for the next time to justify process. You can't wait for the next time to justify compromise with a group, because there's a feeling from compromise. See, our definition of love is, if you love me, you'll compromise. God's definition of love is, he loves you and me, but he's not coming one inch our way. And so if you're looking at a didactic way of thinking, the parent may love the child, but the child's going to be punished. And the child may not like that chastening. It's painful for a season, but it produces a peaceful fruit of righteousness. What does that mean? It simply means your child knows the difference between right and wrong. And so he's saying here, our whole intent is to look at this child's intended behavior. And therein lies Pandora's box. Page 15, he says the taxonomy must be organized from simple to complex classes of behavior. And you already see where we're going with that, moving from a traditional over to a transformational mind. In the middle is transition. You have to create this environment of transition. Traditional parents do not like transition, which is rebellion. They want the child to do what's right and learn the facts. But the transformationalists cannot get the person, the child, the parent, the legislator, whoever it is, over to their side of the spectrum without creating and sustaining this rebellious, chaotic, tension-producing environment. Bloom on page 43 writes, "It is to be hoped that the taxonomy's analysis of problem-solving methods will facilitate the exploration of new methods of teaching for high-level problem-solving and assist in evaluating these methods." So the whole intent was simply to do what Eva's doing. That was high-level problem-solving. She was a problem solver. There was a barrier to her desires. And the whole intent was, in that experience, in that praxis, was how to justify the behavior. Carl Rogers said, "Experience, to me, is the highest authority." And so praxis of man is the highest authority. Our senses determine what is right and wrong. The objectives, Bloom writes on page 26, the objectives to be finally included should be related to the school's view of the, quote, good life for the individual in the good society. Well, see, in early America, the Bible says, cursed is the man who trusts in man. So in early America, we didn't trust government. We didn't trust man. Man is not good. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. See, in America, we understood man is not good. He does not will to do good, and his passions are not okay. Now, in the French Revolution, they believed man was good, he willed to do good, and his passions were okay. So all you have to do is create a healthy environment, and the goodness of man will manifest. And what's the healthy environment? It's create an environment where there's pressure on everybody to exclude all the negatives that are not tied directly to man. Because with man, it's nothing but positive. See, whenever you desire to do something, you don't see that as negative, you see that as positive. And so man's inclination, you know, you put a car on a hill and leave the brakes off, its inclination, its desire, is to go down the hill. And, of course, what we have today in our society, because we don't have brakes, godly restraint, the Ten Commandments removed not only from the classroom, you won't find it in the workplace, and it's being removed from the courts. Supreme Court's going to have to get up there and jackhammer Moses and Ten Commandments off the top of the Supreme Court building. But that's their intent. And so we have a society of the good life. But see, the Word of God says, no, you are not good. The commercial, you deserve a break today. The truth is, you deserve nothing today until you understand that. You do not understand God's grace and mercy and love. For all have sinned, see, and fallen short of the glory of God. And we know we sin because there's God's law, the definition of a healthy soul. But they've done what the communist Chinese do. This is a good life. We have created an environment, a good environment, so the goodness of man will manifest itself. And so I'll read that again. He says, "The objectives to be finally included should be related to the school's view of the good life for the individual in the good society." And then they ask these questions. What are the important values? Whoa, you mean there are some values that are good and some aren't? Sure. In a closed society, those are bad values because they limit human relationship. What is the proper relations between man and society? See, not man and God. Paul Tillich, who met with the Frankfurt School in Germany, in Frankfurt, Germany, until 1932, and then ended up in Harvard, he said, "Sin is the estrangement of man from man, or man from mankind." Well, no, sin is the estrangement of man from God. See, we're talking the difference between didactic and dialectic paradigms or ways of thinking. And then Bloom asked this question, what are the proper relations between man and man? And so therein lies the quest of restructuring how we think, all for the sake of world peace. It is recognized, on page 41, Bloom writes, "It is recognized that unless the individual can do his own problem solving, he cannot maintain his integrity as an independent personality." Now, this is a trap. The Marxists actually talk about Martin Luther, his priesthood of all believers, and what they said was Luther came along and delivered the individual from the high authority. And so now man can think for himself. But what they said in their mindset, they didn't understand that Luther was saying, you know, as Jesus said, call no man father on earth, but you never reject the structure of father because it's your heavenly father. You still keep the structure, but it's no longer man. You're not trusting in man, you're trusting in the Creator. And so the office is what's good. Dad and mom aren't perfect again, but the office is. And so Jesus was saying, the office is good. It's just that now the office is in its proper position. You return to what Adam and Eve should have been, where Adam was loyal to God, not to Eve, not to himself, not to the creation. But what when Bloom refers to Erich Fromm and Escape from Freedom, Fromm was simply writing the German people had been delivered from the fear of God, but they were now individuals, but they were alienated from one another and they couldn't stand alone. And so what they do, they look for a God figure. They were secular, so they look for Hitler, a God figure. Instead of going to the collective experience, the collective now is God. We are born again, as Irvin Yalom said in his book Theory and Practice in Group Psychotherapy. We are born again in the group. And so the independent personality, the person now needs to be a problem solver. Eve was a problem solver. Then on page 41 again, he says, closely allied to this concept of maturity and integrity is the concept of the individual as a member of a democracy. Now, the Marxists who came here that Bloom referred to used the word revolutionary in their German manuscripts, but when they translated it to English, they would substitute democratic for revolutionary. In fact, Norman O. Brown says democracy finds its foundation in Eros. Page 41 again, Bloom states, individuals in a democracy are responsible for the conduct of democratic political system. In other words, you must be loyal to the communist globalist agenda, as well as democratic ways of life, which means you cannot be tolerant of the right. You can only be tolerant of the left. And this is all communist, hardline communist, Marxist, globalist rhetoric in two books that are foundational for teacher certification in the United States of America. Now, so the levels of the cognitive domain, again, were knowing and comprehending, application, analysis, synthesis, and evaluation. I contend all you need is knowing and comprehension because you simply tell your child the law, you cannot go out, now they know, and then you look them in the eye and you say, do you understand what I just said? And the comprehension is, you disobey, you're punished, you obey, you're blessed. Now, the application is, if you disobey, you're going to be punished. If you obey, you're going to be blessed. And so the analysis is, you do what you're supposed to do. But see, Bloom says, no, we have to do the synthesis. And the only way you can do that is in the application, we have to bring in diversity. Therein lies the diverse group. And so once we get the diverse group, they're in relationship because they're going to dialogue to a consensus, which means with feelings. We all want to, which means everybody has to bring their oddities out. Well, I ought to be able to. We ought to be able to get along. Why aren't we getting along? Because somebody's brought the thou shalt not into the room. And so that the analysis then is to analyze the people who are obstructing or a barrier to social harmony. And so therefore, we then do the synthesis. We find what we all have in common, and we then have to practice it. You go out and practice it. It's not enough to talk about and feel it, you know, emotional stories about it. You must actually go out and participate as a group. And by doing so, you then justify, you know, what you have done is the right thing. And you do the evaluation. Did it work? Did it not work? Why didn't it work? Well, it didn't work because Joe just wasn't one working with us. He had a little subgroup out there, some Christians out there that he reinforced his old way of thinking again, and we thought we had him on the line, and then all of a sudden we lost him and we weren't able to get the project done. You know, it doesn't matter if you come up with 2+2=5 in the group grade. Though you can still get an A if you did the process right. Well, now the second book, The Effective Domain, by leading editor was David Crathwell. Of course, Bloom is fully involved. His name is second in the list. On page 3, in the feelings domain, the heart, again, the Bible says the heart is deceitful. We're never deceived because somebody lied to us. We're deceived because we trusted them. And out of the heart of men. All the shopping list of iniquity, that's what I call it, comes out of the heart of men. All the sins of man come out of the heart of men. It was the imagination of the heart. That's why God flooded the world. And so here lies the book that is of the heart of man, the effective of the feelings domain. On page 3, Bloom states, in 1948, a group of psychologists interested in achieving testing met at an American Psychological Association convention in Boston. So there again, he is telling people where this all came from. And it was prior to these guys, of course. It was transformational Marxists, social psychology, sociology Marx, psychology Freud. What do they have in common? A contempt and hate for authority, accountability for authority. They hated limits and restraints. Page 3, he says, Securing a common terminology for describing and referring to the human behavior characteristics we are attempting to appraise in our different schools and college settings. Now, it's interesting that he uses this behavioral characteristics because in this whole process, it is what is similar and not contrast. With God, it's always contrast. He is holy, we are not. He is light, we are dark. See, and so it's always contrast. 2 + 2 = 4 cannot be any other number. So in a didactic society, it's always contrast, light and dark. But in the dialectic, it's always similar. In other words, if we have a diverse group of people, we try to focus on what we have in common. And by doing that, we exclude the contrast. And so if you come in and you start doing contrast, you're going to be called what? Negative, divisive, hateful, intolerant, prejudiced, maladjusted, lower to thinker, unadaptable to change, you know, an aggressor, a blocker, a dominator, special interest, leader, self-seeker, all kinds of terms to convince you that you're not welcome or you need to change or you need counseling. And you're the problem. It's not the group, it's you. It's not the world, it's you. In fact, in the garden, there's a problem. It wasn't Adam and Eve, it wasn't Satan, it was God. He had an attitude. He didn't know how to get along. He didn't know how to compromise. He didn't know how to do group hug. He wasn't groupthink. Then Bloom continues. He says, the types of human reactions or responses to the content, subject matter, problems, or areas of human experience defined in terms of thoughts, feelings, and actions. So there again is the totality of man as far as they're concerned, the pure materialistic part of mankind. So they're looking at the types of human reaction or response to the subject matter or areas of human experience. So they're looking at the language you use. Are you an is and a thou shalt not person? Oh, you're really in trouble if you're a thou shalt not person. This whole process is called negation of negation. How can we get the thou shalt nots out of you? Well, they have to find the ought to be's. Can't go out. Why? Because I said so. And then you go, well, I ought to be able to. If I get your ought to be, I know your what you don't like about your thou shalt nots. And so if I can, your inclination is going with your oughts. So if I create an environment where you can follow your inclinations and get your ought out, your ought is always good. And so the goodness of mankind, and so if we build society on the oughtiness, as Abraham Maslow called it, we have to create an environment of oughtiness. And by doing so, you will attack your thou shalt not. Anytime you hear an ought, a thou shalt not is under attack. So when Eve said, nor touch it, she was sharing, I'll at least be able to touch it. And once she was in a permissive environment where she could share her ought to be, you know, there's no way she could share her ought to be without there being an inclination to do something she was told she couldn't do. And once she gets it out, even though she mentions the thou shalt not, it's not brought up again, other than Satan saying, oh, you won't die. You know, the fear, there is no fear of God in our ought to be's. Our ought to be's are good. See, God is irrational. Our parents are irrational. The Constitution is irrational. Nationalism is irrational. We need to just all care about one another and love one another. And there's a big part of us that would love to have that. But Jesus said, you know, he had said, I have not come to bring peace in the world. I've come to divide the father from the son, the mother from the daughter, the mother-in-law from the daughter-in-law. Why? Because truth is what it's all about. See, we're born in our sin. So we can do the group hug. Broad is that path. It's just a group hug path. It's not that saying that we don't love. We share the truth in love. We are to relate. The koinonia is where two or three are gathered. We have the relationship, but it's a relationship of a reproving and correcting, rebuking, because our unity is found in Christ. Our unity is not found in man. Our unity, in fact, isn't found in our needs. Because if unity is found in our needs, then we're going to compromise the word, because Jesus had needs in the temptation, turned a stone into bread, and he said, it is written. So he went to the text. That's where our unity is found. It's in the text. What my dad says, he who does my Father's will in heaven is my brother, sister, mother. And so the paradigm shift is how to destroy this traditional home, traditional way of thinking. Page 11, Bloom writes, whether or not the classification system presented in Book 1, Cognitive Domain, is a true taxonomy is still far from clear. Wow! We really don't know for sure if it's right. In fact, in his book, he writes 40 years later, he said the theory behind the taxonomy was unproven at the time and may well be unprovable. But it's used, folks. We're in a laboratory with some mad scientists. Whether or not the classification system presented in the book one is the true taxonomy is still far from clear. My. How foolish we are. Then he says, the learning environment must gather major emphasis to the opportunities to practice the behavior. In other words, your child wanted to grab the crayon right on the wall. Now we have to create an environment where they feel free to do so and overcome the fear of restraint of parents and God or higher authority. Page 17, he said, we need to grade students with respect to their interests, attitudes, or character development. Well, so if the child comes up with 2 plus 2 is 5, if they're really thinking about group harmony, that's where it's all going to be. If they come in with an attitude of saying, well, no, 2 plus 2 is 4, really, it doesn't matter how you feel or think, we got some problems, see, with that child. It's the attitude of the child. It's the character development, the interests of the child. The child's interested in obeying the parent, which means they're neurotic. Page 18, Bloom writes, one's beliefs, attitudes, values, and personality characteristics are more likely to be regarded as private matters except in the most extreme instances already noted. And so I'm saying these in a traditional society are personal. They're private. They're to you. And that's, by the way, what God gives you. He gave Adam and Eve a garden, and he didn't hang over them all the time. He wasn't surrounding them. He left them alone because he gave them standards. As long as they stayed within the standards, there's liberty in law. They had liberty. But you see, he gives us beliefs, attitudes, values, and personality characteristics. And they're all to the private realm. But Bloom goes on that. He says, my attitude, oh, wow, here's what he says on page 18. He references God. My attitude toward God, family, home are private concerns. He's talking about the traditional home, the traditional thinking person. They're private. See, on the Day of Judgment, there's no group grade. But see, folks, in the dialectic, there is a group grade. In a communist system, it is always a group grade. Then he says, the public-private status of cognitive versus effective behaviors is deeply rooted in the Judeo-Christian religion and is a value highly cherished in the democratic tradition of the Western world. And he, in essence, is mocking it. He's saying there's a public-private status. In other words, you don't have the two together. You have the separation of the government from the people. The government is limited. The people have the greatest amount of freedom. What does that mean? The parents can discipline their children. The worker or the boss can discipline his worker. And so you have a capitalist society. And their whole agenda, they see this as Judeo-Christian in its structure. And when they say democratic society, no, it's a constitutional tradition of the Western world. And they had to undo the effect of the Christian faith in the Western world. Closely linked to the private aspects of effective behavior. Now, what does that mean? It simply means the parents have the right to discipline the child and his inclinations, his feelings to do things. He then has under control, self-control, self-discipline. Again, God says, humble yourself and deny yourself. But he says, closely linked to the private aspect of effective behavior is the distinction frequently made between education and indoctrination in democratic societies. So they see it as indoctrination, but God says that we are to inculcate. When you know the truth, you teach the truth. You preach and teach the word of God. That's why Noah wasn't heard in his day, because teaching and preaching wasn't, he had a wrong attitude. It wasn't just the word, it was his attitude. It's not, you can come in with a glass of water, but if you come in with the wrong attitude today, you're going to be rejected. Bloom then writes, education opens up possibilities for free choice and individual decisions. Well, that's all Eve was doing. She had now, via Satan and the environment he allowed, the permissive environment he created, it's now she has free choice. And she can make the decision. Actually, God gave Adam and Eve the choice. Satan came along and he enticed them. Indoctrination, on the other hand, is viewed as reducing the possibilities of free choice and decision. Well, there's your conscience. Got to get rid of it. What do? We go to the superego. And he's going to talk about this. He writes, do you not see this Marxist rhetoric in this book? And yet, I earned my teacher's degree in a Christian college in 1971, built on Bloom's taxonomy, as every teacher, certified teacher in America. Indoctrination is regarded as an attempt to persuade and coerce the individual to accept a particular viewpoint or belief, to act in a particular manner, and to profess a particular value and way of life. Well, Jesus definitely said that in the garden. He said, it is written, Dad says, Dad says, Dad says, I can do nothing of my own self. And so as a Christian, he is defining a Christian. This is the attitude of the Christian. But he's defining it to destroy it. And he calls it coercion. See, and it, sure, it's persuasion. God persuades. But they see persuasion as use of force. But God desires that none be lost. Jesus didn't come to break a reed or you know, put out a fire. He just came to share the truth. He said, my kingdom is not of this world. He didn't come to raise up an army to overcome the evils of the world, because the evil lies within mankind. But Bloom and his whole process is, no, we have to create a healthy environment. See, in the Soviet Union, they were creating a healthy environment when they killed the kulaks, the father figures. In the French Revolution, they were creating a healthy environment where they killed the king and anybody else who thought higher authority. And today, see, we're doing the very same thing. Because this process, the dialectic, always declares war on its own citizens. And Bloom's taxonomy was simply a user-friendly process to do that with, a subtle process. He writes, indoctrination, in other words, the Ten Commandments, obeying God, has come to mean the teaching of effective as well as cognitive behaviors. In other words, you punish, you chasten. And so the effective domain was, you know, there's a fear of God. Then on, amazing statement, then he says, perhaps a reopening of the entire question would help us to see more clearly the boundaries between education and indoctrination and the simple dichotomy expressed above between cognitive and effective behavior would no longer seem as real as a rather glib separation of the two suggests. Well, there's to be a separation. Because you didn't want the teacher to be dealing with the effective domain, where you allowed your child to have an experience where they could get their feelings out in response to your thou shalt not. That's all Satan was doing with Eve. You know, how do you feel? Well, I'll at least be able to touch it. Well, what do you think? Well, it looks like it's a good tree to me. God doesn't make any sense. And she's saying, in essence, you know, Satan, you're my friend. You know, you're the great one. Wow, this is an awesome process. I can now be God. And see, Satan said, I will become like God. And he comes to Eve and said, you can become like God. So these guys want to be God-like. They hate God. They tell you not to believe in God. And yet, they want you to worship them and the process. By worshiping the process, you've abdicated the Creator, and you now worship the creation. On page 20, Bloom states, perhaps one of the most dramatic events highlighting the needs for progress in the effective domain is the publication of Jacob's Changing Values in College. And this is 1957. And what that's all about, they saw, he realized that the students were going in the 50s, and they were coming out unchanged. Why? Because they had traditional professors who said, listen, you're in an engineering class, you learn the facts. And if you're not here to learn the facts, you know, you're out of here. Now, a book later published called Arrogance on Campus. Who are those? Those were the traditional didactic teaching professors who taught the students facts and weren't into the feely-feely group hug process. And it was all about how to evaluate, to remove these professors. Same thing as regards to anybody in society that thinks didactic. Page 22, he says, teachers, yielding control over objectives to the examiners will enable students to grow in ways specified by the objectives. In other words, teachers yielding to this process will help the child change. Places educational direction and control in the hands of a small number of instrument makers. Now, a broader picture of what he's saying here is you cannot allow a traditional society to set the standards up, because they would say, okay, here's the Ten Commandments, memorize the Ten Commandments. They're seeing a federal national education system, and they're saying if the Christians got a hold of this, that they would simply inculcate their standard. Well, you know, our federal government had nothing to do with education. Even the states limited education. It was mostly in the parents' hands, but it was going not only national but international to the UN. And so therefore they say somebody has to be in control, and we want to make sure that it's not a Christian structure, that is globalist dialectic in its nature. And it has to go all the way down into the home. That's all Bloom was setting up here, was a UN structure. R.H. Davis, out of UNESCO, works on the psychomotor level of this. And remember, Ralph Tyler, fully involved in laying out a Politburo system for the United States of America, loved by these educators. He writes, Bloom, on page 23 in the Effective Domain, the taxonomy will provide a bridge for further communication among teachers and between teachers and evaluators, curriculum research workers, psychologists, and other behavioral scientists. Again, social psychology is transformational Marxism. He says, as this communication process develops, it is likely that the folklore, the traditional parents out there, you know, the Bible, can be replaced by a somewhat more precise understanding of how effective behaviors develop. Well, that's Freud. You just have these inclinations, and so that's the real you. And how and when they can be modified, in other words, don't punish your child. You just dialogue with your child and help them to discover their inclinations in a healthy way, and what the school can and cannot do to develop them in particular forms. Of course, what are the forms? You can't discipline the children anymore. You have to have peer pressure. They say, oh, we don't want peer pressure. You know what they were saying? They didn't want the traditional students in there putting pressure on, you know, they didn't want students with a right-wrong attitude putting pressure on kids who were deviant. So now the deviant has to be incorporated. In other words, tolerance is, the word tolerance is not showing up on the Day of Judgment. This whole process says, let's be tolerant of the deviant. Deviancy now is the norm. It's deviancy in unity.